This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. With fall fast approaching, many people are starting to shut down their gardens for the year, but there's still a lot of growing season left in our area. With the right preparations and the right plants, you'll be enjoying fresh vegetables through the autumn months. Joining us to discuss fall crops and offer tips on what jobs to take care of now in our yards and gardens are Adult Education Director at Turner Farm, Melinda O'Brien, Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles, and co-owner of Home Meadows Song Farm and director of the Community Garden Program at Turner Farm, Peter Huttinger. You can give us a call with your gardening questions at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Sarah, Peter, and Melinda, good to see everybody this afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Thank you.
So, Peter, just because my tomatoes have ripened, I don't have to put my garden to rest at this point?
No, you don't. I mean, your tomatoes will be producing for a while to come, but other crops you may have already, harvested. Like just the other day, we finished harvesting all the sweet corn at the Franciscan Community Garden. So we'll be following that crop with a crop of bush beans.
So what makes fall a good time of year for a garden?
Well, there's a number of things that you can grow, and particularly things in the brassica family like broccoli, cauliflower, and different greens. As you kind of move towards the cooler weather, they actually do better and are more flavorful. I mean, some people feel like certain things like collards or kale and different things or even broccoli, if it gets a little nip of frost, it actually makes it a little sweeter. In particular, I think carrots are a good crop for that. I know Melinda can really talk probably in more depth about the carrots and some of these crops.
So carrots are a good fall crop?
Yeah, carrots are – they taste much better when you raise them when it's cool. So when you raise them during the heat, they have alkaloids and they get a little bitter. So when you raise them – but it's actually the right time to plant carrots for a really big carrot is to plant them in the mid-July. Early August, you might be able to still grow some carrots, but they won't size up to a really huge size. But a lot of people like baby carrots anyway, but they are a lot more delicious. And then actually the really amazing thing about carrots is that you can actually start planting carrots again in December and January. So if you prepare a bed this fall and then maybe make a raised bed, and then in January or December, whenever you can get out, you can just plant some carrots in there, and then they will be very good spring carrots. And again, they'll be a lot sweeter than those that you would have planted later. But it does take those, if you plant them in December or January, they take a long, long time to grow. They're going to grow a lot slower, but they'd be ready in May.
So, see, that's something I never knew. Carrots. Never would have thought of that one. Sarah, with the weather that we're having, all this rain that we're getting all of a sudden after this long dry spell that we've had, how's that affecting plants and soil?
Well, in particular, you know, especially if we're thinking about our soil, if we get this long, you know, kind of easy stream of rain, that really soaks in the soil, which is really good. And most of our vegetables and in our turf, we like to have 1 inch of rain a week. But if we have a hard downpour, a lot of that ends up just being just right into the gutters. It doesn't really percolate or, you know, or soak into the soil, and it actually can do more damage. So, you know, like today, we've had good amount of rain, a steady stream of water. So we want to just keep in mind that even though it's rained, if it's a heavy downpour like we had earlier in the week, you know, we may still have to go outside and water our plants. I know it might sound a little funny, but it's true. Get a rain gauge, put it out in your garden, and see how much rain actually accumulates over a period of time so that it helps you better accurately determine if you should water or not.
Peter, are plants getting waterlogged from all this? Should you turn or you till a garden when it's as wet as it's been?
Well, you don't want to disrupt the soil when it's this wet because it'll really cake up and clot and not become very hard, and you don't really want to do that. If you've been routinely hoeing and or you have mulch in your garden, then when it rains hard, that'll kind of help the water sink in. Also, if you have soil that you've been working on and has a good amount of organic matter in it also, that'll really help absorb the water and be beneficial. Another thing, too, is if your garden is on a slight slope, you always want to kind of create your rows on what's called contour. You want to have the rows crossing and your pathways crossing the lengthwise of the slope. So that way it kind of makes a kind of a little bit of a dam and slows water down as it runs down. And that will also help prevent, you know, with erosion, but also allow you to actually collect water.
Now, what if you've got a raised box? Does that matter at this point? Does that change anything?
Well, it changes the things a great deal, particularly like in the early spring or anytime you have heavy concentration of rain, is that, you know, being raised up, you usually have more loamy, more soil with more organic matter on it, and it'll drain faster. So during dry periods, you may need to do a little bit more watering, but your raised bed will dry out a little bit faster in the spring, so you can actually plant earlier. And then in terms of avoiding, you know, different fungal diseases or root rots from oversaturation of soil, you know, that certainly will help alleviate that.
Is it a good idea to put rain barrels out when we have the opportunity like this?
Yeah, actually at the office today in the rain, actually my dad came over to help, and we were connecting the downspout into the rain barrel. Just keep in mind when you're watering, irrigating with your rain barrel, to be cautious of what you're using that water for. For example, extension, we really advise not to use it for our leafy greens because a lot of times our water we're collecting from the rooftop. So it can have rooftop sediments or fecal matter from birds, things like that. And that can get in the water. And you don't, you know, if you're eating kale, lettuce, you don't really want to water with that. But of course, ornamentals or tomatoes that you're not getting that rainwater directly on the fruit or the vegetable that you're harvesting and eating. But yeah, definitely, this is a good time. Spring will be a good time to collect all the rainwater.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. And Peter, what do you think is the most important thing people need to know when it comes to gardening in the fall?
Well, that's a kind of caught me off guard on that one. Well, I think the important thing
is it a matter of timing?
It's a matter of timing, but it's also, first of all, is just to realize that Cincinnati has three basic growing seasons. So you have spring, summer, and fall, and that there are a number of cool weather crops that we had mentioned before that you can grow, and that certain crops actually are more flavorful and much more bountiful when you grow them in the cool season.
It's easier to grow lettuce and spinach in the middle of winter than it is in the summertime. So
now I'm surprised by that, really.
Yes. If you get your lettuce and spinach planted before the end of September, it is possible to be keeping those alive and harvesting from them all winter long whenever it's warm enough, and actually be harvesting from them in the spring. And arugula, you can go fairly late into the winter, but it usually doesn't survive the winter, so it wouldn't make it all the way to spring. But your fall planting of spinach, you can be picking that also in May.
What we were talking about earlier, and Melinda, I'll have to mention what you said. You know, one of many reasons to plant in the fall is it's not as hot.
Right.
And also we have less environmental pressure, such as heat stress.
Fewer pests, maybe.
And fewer pests and diseases. Exactly. So, you know, keep that in mind, too, that you don't have all those other, in my opinion, negative pressures or stresses on our plant.
Yeah, the flea beetles that can be really a real big problem on arugula, and sometimes the kale and things like that, they will die at some point. Usually when I plant arugula, I'll plant the seeds and then I'll put a floating row cover right down on top of it to keep them, the flea beetles, away in the beginning. And then later on, I can take the row cover off because they're just not there. They're not alive anymore.
But I think the use of the row cover, too, is an interesting thing to bring up, is because as you kind of start getting some of the early cold snaps or early light frost, if you use these floating row covers or remay and just like loosely place that over your plants overnight and take it off in the morning, you can really that's one way to extend your season. You can also use low wire hoops or PVC pipes and create what's called a low tunnel and cover and extend the season for these crops. And that's extremely beneficial. You don't need a big fancy greenhouse. You don't have to invest a lot of money.
So you can actually keep going into the winter with your crops.
Yeah, fairly long, depending on the season.
Yeah, yeah. And that the spinach, in order to keep that alive, and lettuce, in order to keep it alive throughout the winter, you do need to have a floating row cover or something over it to keep it alive, to keep it in the coldest part of the winter. And then you can't harvest when it's below freezing, You know, the row cover actually would get frozen to the ground or get frozen to the plants, and you actually cannot get the row cover off. But who wants to be out there harvesting when it's below freezing anyway?
Yeah. So, or too hot. Too hot or too cold. One way or the other, who wants to do it, right?
Yeah. Right.
So as far as timing, Peter, we were talking about that. How do you figure the timing? Is it a matter of knowing what the frost date's going to be and then working backward from there as to when you plant?
Yeah, exactly. You can look at the seed package. It'll say how many days to maturity. And what is there a frost date here? Is it October 15th?
That's usually what I figure, that we'll have a killing frost sometime around mid-October. Yeah. Now, last year, I don't think we had a killing frost until early November, but that's unusual.
Right.
Yeah, and the weather's so unpredictable around here. If you do a lot of planting and then all of a sudden it snows on Halloween, are your plants going to survive?
That's where you kind of keep, you know, I guess have an app or know to watch the weather, and then use these little row covers or protect them from any frost or, you know, damaging weather. And then like the low tunnels, what we were talking about, that's a really good way as well to prevent any type of winter damage. And it also warms up the soil as well, which is a whole other different aspect too.
Yeah, when you cover the plants, actually, it's interesting is that because a lot of people think the sun is all the heat is coming from the sun, but it's actually, you know, at night, the heat is actually coming up from the ground. That helps stabilize or equalize the temperature. You know, it's not going to let you grow year-round, but it definitely, you can extend your season by a matter of weeks easily.
We will continue our conversation. You can give us a call with your gardening questions at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and joining us to discuss fall crops and answer your gardening questions are Adult Education Director at Turner Farm, Melinda O'Brien, Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stolls, and co-owner of Homedo Song Farm and Director of the Community Garden Program at Turner Farm, Peter Huttinger. And you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Mark in Cincinnati joins us now. Good afternoon, Mark.
Hey, all. Thanks for taking my call. I have some cucumbers that are looking really tired. I don't know if they're dying prematurely or if there's something that is getting to them, or if there's anything I can do to keep them producing. They've been doing really great. A lot of cucumbers. And I just wondered, the leaves are yellowing and starting to just wilt. I don't see nearly as many blooms. Is there a life cycle for cucumbers? Should I expect them to be declining this time of year with this heat, or is there something else I can do to help them?
It's probably not the heat. Cucumbers are tough because there are a number of pests that really like cucumbers, and some of them from vector diseases. So it's not unusual for your cucumbers to be looking great, producing great, and then just up and die. So there's striped and spotted cucumber beetles, just a number of different pests. And since we're organic at Turner Farm, there's not too many products that we can use to help us out. So we normally just try to do successions on cucumbers. So we would make a couple different successions. So when the first group die, hopefully we have more coming on.
And then we get this question actually at the garden. In Campbell County, we have what cucumbers look to be a little bit deformed. And that is a result of just some poor pollination going on. So, and I've had some calls and, you know, pictures sent to me. So if they kind of look a little bit deformed, you know, maybe put in some beehive and or, you know, increase your diversity of your plant material to encourage some of these pollinators into your garden.
Let's talk with Ann in Dayton. Good afternoon, Ann.
Hi. I have a small suburban yard with a small garden, just 200 square feet, and I do all tomatoes in my garden just because that fits with my cooking really well. And, of course, over the many years I've grown tomatoes, I've had, you know, good crops and bad crops, especially after some years planting them in the same spot. Then, you know, I have a pretty poor yield and a lot of disease in it. One year after I planted tomatoes, it was my daughter's wedding the next year, and the tomatoes did really poorly, so I just said, the heck with planting tomatoes, and we planted stuff that we used for decorations for her wedding. We planted wheat, and we planted little baby pumpkins, little jacky little pumpkins. And the year after that, when I planted tomatoes, they were bountiful. It was a great crop. Last year, I had a really bad year again, and this year I moved my garden to another part of the yard, and it's doing great again. And so now I'm thinking, okay, what can I do to help keep this new plot really healthy, keep the soil more healthy? Is there anything I can plant that will help when I put in tomatoes next year or the year after? To keep people more healthy.
Well, you've just described exactly what is called crop rotation. So especially our Solanaceae crops like our tomatoes and our peppers, you never want to put in an area more than 3 years. You know, you may want to move after a first year if there's a really horrible outbreak of a disease or an insect and they're not yielding very high. So unfortunately, in an urban setting or a small space setting, you know, crop rotation may be challenging. But if you have two or three spots that you can rotate your tomatoes around, that would be ideal. Of course, always incorporating compost and organic matter into that, you know, that would be one of my first suggestions. Any other thoughts?
Well, I think you can do, like when your tomatoes die back, you can also follow with a cover crop or what's called a green manure crop. And later this month or early next month, Melinda's going to be teaching a class at Turner Farm and at Franciscan Community Garden on cover crops. And there are a couple of different ways you can go. A winter rye is something that will germinate in fairly cool weather and over winter, and then you turn it in the spring. It's more work to turn in the spring. And if you want to do early crops in the spring, winter rye is not what you want to use, but you can get it turned in and the soil prepared for planting things like peppers and tomatoes. That's fine. But if you wanted to do early peas, you'd want to do a cover crop of, say, one of these mixed ones that are a combination of grasses, herbaceous plants, and some root vegetables. There's a company, Walnut Creek Seed, that distributes and has a nice fall cover. Or else you could also use a crop vetch that could be cut back in early spring and then planted into. But I would really look into that. Keep your rotation going. If you have two plots now, definitely don't do your tomatoes in the same place every year, because you can end up in pretty serious trouble in the long run.
Yeah, you're a big advocate for succession planning too, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you can, even if you, with some crops that you do early in the spring, you can follow with something like beans or a legume, and that'll also help to a certain degree recharge the soil. And some plants like corn is a very heavy feeder. You know, roots are much more modest, and legumes can be a kind of – I mean, they do draw from the soil, but they also recharge the soil through the nitrogen nodes on the roots.
Let's talk to Judy in Centerville. Hi, Judy.
Hi. I have tomato plants growing in big pots on my patio, and I have – noticed in the last week that these, I guess, poisonous mushrooms are also growing near my tomato plants, and I'm wondering if that is a problem, eating the tomatoes from the tomato plants. I mean, the tomatoes aren't touching the mushrooms, but the mushrooms are growing in the pot for some reason.
Well, there are different types of mushrooms, and especially if we think about it, mushroom is just there are different spores that, and they like really wet, damp area. So I get this question quite often. They're not inoculating or hurting our fruits or vegetables that we're harvesting. From your description, I can't say that it is toxic. So that would be something that, you know, reaching out to someone who knows that. But just from a general, when I get these types of calls, the majority of them are not toxic. My suggestion to you on kind of a hot day is just take a shovel and just remove the top layer, because they don't have roots per se, or they're very shallow, and just put that in a plastic bag and destroy it. And watch your watering, because again, mushrooms, fungal growths like damp, cool areas. But they're, you know, again, based on your your description, I can't determine if that's a toxic mushroom or fungal spore.
And Sarah, with all the rain we've gotten, how big a problem are mushrooms and molds throughout the yard and garden?
Well, for instance, I was just out in my personal garden, out in the work garden yesterday, and there are these little mushrooms developing in our garden and my garden around the tomatoes, around our blueberries, in fact, and in our rose garden. And I just took our shuffle hoe and I just removed that. And, you know, to me, it's just part of the game. And we just make sure that we don't mulch too deep. We don't overwater. And, you know, we don't harvest them for any reason.
And often you'll see mushrooms coming up in animal manure that hasn't been overly completely decomposed. Or composted before you apply it. And it's part of the natural process of building soil. I mean, it's not a bad thing. It just shows that your soil is biologically active. With some of this stuff, too, people will be using a wood mulch or wood chips that aren't completely decomposed and have worked that into their garden. And so that becomes a situation where it facilitates the growth of the mushrooms. So
actually, some of the mulch that we use, our compost, what it's called, is called mushroom compost.
Right.
And in fact, that reminded me before coming today, I got in my car and I parked right by our compost pile, and along with weeds, but guess what was growing from the compost pile? It was mushrooms.
Yes.
So again, I don't think it's a bad, and these are not toxic, the ones that I saw, but you know, I wouldn't suggest spraying anything. I would just take your shovel on a, you know, because all those little spores, they love it. And on a rainy, windy day like today, they're just spreading. And you going and harvesting them and putting them in a bag to dispose of them, you know, that would further irritate it.
And often if you have a pile of wood chips and you kind of put a shovel in and turn around, you see these kind of orange fibrous fibers. You see different – this is all fungi and mushrooms and different things that are working to break down, and that's how the soil is created. I mean, it's actually a very positive thing. It's a sign of active life within your soil.
And even if they're poisonous, there's no risk of contaminating plants around the mushrooms?
Majority of the time, no, but I am not a mushroom specialist or an expert. So And I get this call quite often for children or animals, dogs, for example. My general rule of thumb, when in doubt, get rid of it. So if you're concerned, if you can't get a straightforward answer, then just get rid of it.
Melinda, do you grow mushrooms at Turner Farm?
We do grow mushrooms at Turner Farm, yes, we do.
Edible ones, I would say.
Yes,
take.
We do, yes.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. We had a question come in from Nasreen, and she wants to know, she has two spring dogwood trees about 5 inches tall. So she wants to know, should she keep them inside the house or the garage this winter, and then plant them in the spring? Is there anything special that she should be doing for them to care for them while they're inside?
So they're in containers?
Yeah, it sounds like that's the case.
Okay, so fall is a good time to plant. Majority of our, because they dogwoods, red buds, they and other other plants, they spring, or they bloom in the spring. So if she can heal them in, if she doesn't have a spot, which means keep them in a container and use hardwood mulch and keep them outside, because you don't want them also to dry out if you bring them in a garage or something like that. Or November, for example, October, November, it's a good time to plant in the ground as long as they have a good root system, because 5 inches doesn't sound, you know, too big. And they can be, if they're not too established with their root zone, they could get a little damage in the winter. So she can heal them in outside, maybe use a piece of cheesecloth or something to protect it a little bit. I usually don't recommend bringing them inside because that tends to, with the heat of the house, will dry them out too quickly.
But even though they're small, she shouldn't have any problem planting.
No. Mm-mm. And they're pretty, you know, forgiving.
Also, I would put some kind of fencing around them or something just so you don't forget and run over them with a lawnmower. And also
exactly.
Kind of protect them from, you know, deer or some other animals that may want to come and have a winter snack.
Good point.
Yeah. Very good point.
Yeah, so the thing is, a lot of times you put things out and you think, I'll remember where it is. Well,
no.
No.
My oldest son has never forgiven me because I ran over his Arbor Day tree.
There you go.
That we planted, ran it over the lawn. I felt terrible when that happened, too.
And that's a good point you're saying, is you can put these low, like a little bit of fencing or hardware cloth around it to kind of keep rabbits away from it. But then if you put a taller stake and maybe paint it a bright color on top just so – you know, you don't forget where it is during winter and, you know, people run across it or play on it.
How about those tomato cages that they're
not? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then you could put cheesecloth or something around that to protect it a little bit.
Question by email. We notice a lawn filled with bunches of 4 to 6 inch white spikes growing in a large area. 4 to 6 inch white spikes. Do you happen to know what they might be?
I mean, a mushroom? I have no
idea.
That's
what I was thinking.
Yeah.
If there was a tree there at one time, that's just its natural. That?
Yeah, and mushrooms, people usually think mushrooms grow out, but they can grow up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, we would just sort of need more information to kind of understand what that is.
Some pictures would be helpful.
Okay. 513-419-7100 to join us, and let's talk with Don in Kentucky. Hi, Don.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, thank you.
I have some tomato plants, aroma tomato plants, that I've planted in the pots, like black pots. They also have a good drainage system, and I planted them in organic compost soil. The problem is I've planted them probably months ago, and they have gotten probably 2.5 feet tall, no buds. What can I do? Should I just scrap it for the season, or can I take them and actually put them in the ground and hope to get something out of them?
Well, I don't know if transplanting of this part, I think would be a bad idea because it would probably shock the plant and delay it. Sometimes I can think of as sometimes when they're in these black pots and are full sun, they get a lot of heat and they don't keep enough moisture on them that can keep the plant stressed and it may not produce. Could be a possibility. And it could be also, it could need some fertilizer.
Phosphorus, potassium, you know, that it could be deficient, and that's what's needed for not only good root production but also flower and then, of course, fruit production. So,
and then you might have it in a place that's too shady and not have enough sun for tomatoes, because when I've planted tomatoes, not really in a sunny spot, they've never produced.
6 hours of sunlight would be ideal.
Yeah, or more. Are they in full sun or are they part shade?
It's part shade.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Now that could very well be it if you can get it to a sunnier spot and then just use kind of maybe a small amount of a broad-spectrum organic fertilizer might also help a little bit.
Yeah, use the fish emulsion.
That might be a little bit too much high nitrogen. Is the plant real leafy? Are there a lot of leaves on it?
Yeah, it is leafy, yes.
Because Solanaceae plants are flowering is controlled by the carbon to nitrogen ratio. So if you get the nitrogen up too high, they won't produce fruit. They won't produce flowers and fruit. So I wouldn't use any more fish emulsion.
Okay.
So that first number in that fertilizer ratio is nitrogen. So read the label and just try to choose one that has a low to zero nitrogen ratio.
Okay.
But definitely try and get, I think at this point, sun might be the culprit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Don, thank you so much for the phone call. We appreciate it. Sean from Northern Kentucky had a question. He has some watermelon problems. They're blooming but no fruit. So he wants to know, should he cut back or do they need pollination?
Well, they definitely need pollination in order to produce fruit. Has this been going on a long time? Because actually when pumpkins, they first start blooming and you see a lot of blooms before you see any fruit set. So maybe he just needs to wait longer, possibly. Or how long has this been going on?
Right, it's watermelons. I don't
right.
know. This was an email we got, so mm-hmm. I don't have the time frame.
Oh, we don't know the time frame.
Yeah. We had a situation at work where our land was staying too wet. And so we actually moved our watermelon on a raised bed and they seem to be producing fairly well. Last year we didn't have much because, in my opinion and from our observation, it was just staying too wet. So similar to that of like tomatoes, you know, like the blossom where the flower just falls off, it could be stressed due to the roots are staying too wet. If it's green and you don't see much disease going on, because they can get disease as well, and in their photosynthesizing, well, I would check the drainage. That's really my own, and making sure that you're fertilizing accordingly.
Well, it's a long season plant,
true,
too. If you're not getting melons now, it's, I'm kind of skeptical you're going to get any.
Yeah.
But I do think it's like, even if you don't have a raised bed, to build mounds. And
yeah,
it's the same thing with a lot of your vining squash or pumpkins, to build a mound and plant your seeds in that mound can be extremely helpful.
And since you and Melinda have mentioned pumpkins, is it too late to plant pumpkins and gourds for Halloween?
Yeah, it is. The right time to plant those is really June 25th. Around June 25th is a really great time. And we have planted them as late as maybe July 7th. But they're a kind of a long season plant. Some of them need 90 days in order to produce a fruit. So we don't have 90 days until October. So it's too late.
Mm-hmm. We will continue our conversation about gardening. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining us to discuss fall crops and offer tips on what jobs to take care of now in our yards and gardens, our adult education director at Turner Farm, Melinda O'Brien, Campbell County Extension Office horticulture agent Sarah Stoles, and co-owner of Home Meadows Song Farm and director of the Community Garden Program at Turner Farm, Peter Huttinger. And you can call us with your gardening questions at 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. So, Peter, what do you think is the best way to start fall crops? I've heard some people say start them in a flat first, as opposed to putting them directly in the ground. What do you think on that?
Well, I mean, you can do either. I mean, some things, we're kind of getting a little bit, pushing the data a little bit here. So at this point, I would probably say, you know, work from starts. That you can get from a local nursery and go for that. And so you're doing just like you would plant starts out in the early spring. But there are some things you could still direct. So it kind of depends on what you're going through. Melinda, what do you do at what are you guys doing at Turner right now as you're planting?
Right now, well, we're waiting for it to dry up. And then we will be planting lettuce seeds, lettuce and radish and spinach seeds. Lettuce can actually, depending on the temperature, lettuce germinates best at about 70 degrees. So if it's too hot, sometimes lettuce won't germinate. So actually one trick about that is to actually use old lettuce seeds as opposed to brand new seeds that you've just purchased. Lettuce actually has something on the seed that inhibits them from germinating. And as the seed ages, that breaks down. So old leftover seeds are better to use than fresh seeds. Spinach seed also, you can sometimes have difficulty getting it to germinate because it's too hot. So what I actually do is I put the spinach seeds between wet paper towel and put it in the refrigerator for 5 days to 7 days. And by that time, sometimes you'll see the root radicle coming out, and then you can sow that into the garden. You have to do it by hand then because it's all wet. But you could just as well, you could start your lettuce and your spinach in a shady location or in your house where it's cooler. And then when it comes up, then transplant that out. But we do a lot of just putting seeds in the ground. But you're right. If you were going to do cabbage or broccoli or those brassicas, you'd need to have transplants right now. It's too late, really, to start them from seed.
And you may see this now in the nurseries, but they call them seed tapes. And so it's already, like, spaced out for you, and you kind of just roll it out into your soil. And you can actually do that yourself with some strips of newspaper and do that yourself on a kind of a rainy day like today, you know, with your lettuce seed, carrot seeds, things like that. But, yeah, a lot of our brassicas, you're going to have to get those in transplants right now. And that prevents, if you do any of these tape-type methods, that prevents you or or lemonades, I should say, from thinning out the plant.
Hey, Melinda, maybe you could talk about what a radical is, because some people may not know what that is.
When the seed, the first thing the seed has to do in order to germinate is it soaks up water, and then the next thing that you'll see is the first root comes out, and that's called the root radical. And then the next thing are the cotyledons, which are the first leaves. And that's an interesting thing, because the first leaves don't look like your second and third leaves. So sometimes I've had people weed out our carrots because they kind of look like just little pieces of grass. And the same thing with spinach. They look like little pieces of grass instead of having round leaf like spinach. So watch out for that, and don't weed out your new little plants.
513-419-7100 to join us, and let's talk with Pete. Hi, Pete.
Hello, Mark and Melinda and Sarah and Peter. I don't know. Good show today, by the way. Very helpful. Thank you. My question isn't so much about planting in the fall, but it does deal with sort of seasonal change, and it doesn't even deal with planting new crops, but maintaining existing perennials. I recently trimmed oak hydrangeas that were growing in my backyard just because they were getting rangy and excessively tall. So I cut them back, and I was noticing that, of course, as the amount of sunlight that happens in a day diminishes as the days go by. Here was my question, probably a dumb one. Does photosynthesis happen throughout the plant, or does the sunlight's impact on the photosynthesis process only affect the leaves and parts of the plants that are now reached during the later part of the season? Is that a fair question?
Well, photosynthesis definitely can start on most of the plant part. The leaves have more absorption of the energy of the sugars and breakdowns and go straight down to the roots. But I may have to research that a little bit. But I'm fairly confident to say that even on trees or like the hard stem of your oak leaf hydrangea, there can be some photosynthesis happening. Any other comments? I'm definitely going to...
And Pete, correct me if I'm wrong, too. I'm wondering if you're concerned that maybe you cut something off of these too soon or cut off a part that was part of the process.
Well, based on the level of my gardening skills, probably.
Okay.
You sound like you have my level of gardening skills, so there. Okay. So
they got a pretty good haircut just because they needed shaping, and it seemed like as good a time as any to do it. So, yes, you're right.
So you did it at the... one of the best times to do that. And sounds like they're fairly mature if they needed a haircut already. So there's already enough absorption and energy stored away in the root system for next year's production. It's not as if you are, you know, if there was only one leaf, then I would be concerned. Or if it was a new planting, say this spring. But it sounds as if it's fairly mature and there's already enough storage in those roots that can take it in through the winter and then bounce it back off in the spring. So I don't in fact, pruning, remember, also helps the overall plant and initiates new growth. So yep. You're not hurting it. I'm confident that there's enough storage for next year's development.
Very good. And I think I heard you say that the photosynthesis does have a systemic effect throughout the whole plant, not just simply on the leaves that are getting the largest amount of sunlight. Is that correct?
I'm fairly confident. I am definitely going to have to research that myself just to see the surface area and what types of the plant absorb X amount percentage of photosynthesis, sugars, and energy and things like that. But, yeah.
Pete, thank you so much for the phone call. We appreciate it. Scott in College Hill is joining us now. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about soil. I've got a raised bed about 15 inches high, and for the past 2 years, I used straw bales with mixed results. So I use that compost and mixed in organic garden soil in the spring, so it's roughly two-thirds of the compost to one-third of the soil. I went yesterday to remove some squash plants that died and noticed all the soil in the garden looks like tiny, tiny rice pellets. I mean, it's dark and beautiful. There's tons of earthworms. But is that normal biotics, I guess, or is there something odd going on with my soil? That makes sense. It's probably hard to say without
seeing it. Are you saying it's like real loose and it kind of looks, resembles like each one's a little pellet?
Yes, tiny pellet.
Is it over the entire... or is it just an isolate? Oh, it's over the entire garden.
Yeah. Well, my first...
I didn't know it was tiny, tiny little bugs.
My first thought were ants, because they have little rice-like eggs. And so we have them in my garden. In fact, I was watering the other day and came across an ant colony, and they were crawling up my legs. And I looked down, and there they all were, including those little rice-like eggs. So that would
be
my
first. Are
they
the color of the soil?
No, they're white.
They're usually white.
It's just the soil. It's dark. It's beautiful. Hmm. It looks like chocolate jimmies you put on cupcakes, but really, really small.
I have seen where I think there's an insect. I think it might be the cicada killer. But that's why I was surprised you say it's over the entire bed. I was going to guess that there is a insect, because I've seen where the cicada killer digs holes and buries the cicada, and that will look like you've kind of described each soil. I mean, it's very distinct little
holes,
like the loose grains of soil.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't expect to see that over the entire bed.
You know, if it's possible, if you have a mobile phone with a camera, if you took a photograph and emailed it to the radio station, they can forward it on to us. We can take a look at it.
I'll do that.
How are your plants growing?
Yeah, how are your plants?
Well, it's 4 hours of sun, so my four cauliflower plants never headed. And I got rid of those, and that's when I noticed this weird soil.
Well, for a fall crop now, doing, you know, lettuce and spinach and different things, I would definitely do that. Another thing,
exactly,
too, is like if you direct sow some brassicas or, you know, things like kale and collards and these plants can also, they don't have to go to complete maturity. You can, like when you get those salad mixes that you buy, I mean, like the little leaves with the red veins or chard and some of those in the baby kale and stuff, you can eat them at any stage.
Hey, Scott, thank you for the phone call.
You're welcome.
Speaking of soil, what about soil preparation for fall crops? Is there anything special that you have to do?
Well, we mentioned cover crops, you know, as a really good way to overwinter a garden. The woman who said that she had the beds in her yard with the tomatoes, I mean, for her to use a cover crop, it's a way of having your land not just be bare. It can have a kind of an aesthetic quality to it. If you use a cocktail mix that has daikon radish in it and, say, Austrian pea, even in December, I've gone on and brushed snow off that cover crop and harvested the beet. The pea and sprouts at the tips for salad. And then you can steal a few daikon radishes mid-season if you want out of a crop, so you can have your cover crop actually also be something that produces for you. What do
have
you guys think?
Have your cover crop and eat it, too?
Have your cover crop and eat it, too. Absolutely. Yeah. And top dressing your bed with compost.
Yep.
And I'll tell you, Weed at the end of season, it'll make a huge difference. And then if you have some leaves, you know, from your trees, run over them with a bagging mower and take those chopped up leaves and put an inch or so on top of the soil, that'll help, you know, create a buffer so the weeds won't grow up in early spring. But, you know, thorough weeding and cleaning out your garden, that hygiene and practice will save you hours and hours of weeding.
And try not to go into the winter with your soil bare.
Right.
Because that really gives an opportunity for some of those really horrible fall germinating annuals to come in, like chickweed, that can be a real problem in your early spring crops. So try not to have your soil bare going into the winter.
Yeah, and you can email me at peter@turnerfarm.org. And Turner Farm has some handouts that kind of recommended scheduling or, you know, planting schedules for season extension. We also have a handout called Gardening in Partnership with Nature that discusses a lot of these things. If you email me, I'd be more than happy to send you a PDF.
Ursula in North Avondale. Hi, Ursula.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for taking my call. I have some ornamental gourds. They're the right size and the color is nice. When can I cut them, or should I just let them go for a while? What do you think?
You'd want the skin to be somewhat tough before you harvest them, but I would say if they're the color that you want and the size you want, they're probably ready.
Okay, and do I do anything with them after I cut them? Do I wax them or let them sit for a while, or are they all right to put in the house?
I've personally never done this, but going to a gourd festival, which is always really fun, this is sometimes where you learn from the farmer themselves, he always stored them in his barn for a period of time, and then he took like a hard brush, and they get really scaly, and then he washed them off, and then they naturally shined up. I don't know what you're planning on doing, but you could shine them up again, but in fact, I'm sure you already know this, but they're really, really tough. But I think that they have to cure almost for about a season or two. And then you can go in and as I guess they cure you, they will become flaky. And then if that's not the look you're looking for, then you'll take somewhat of a hard brush and then just wipe that off.
Okay. And I have another question. Thanks for that answer. I have a Meyer's lemon outside in a pot. I'm sure it won't come through the winter, but how do I treat it when I bring it in here?
You just want to treat it like any of our other annual plants. Of course, you want to make sure that it's not, it likes the sun, of course, because it is a tropical. It's probably not going to produce much fruit. Okay, so the goal in the wintertime is just to make sure that it doesn't dry out. So make sure that you water it thoroughly, making sure that the pot has well-drained soil and with holes so the soil can drain. I would actually, any flowers that would develop, I would pinch those off because it takes a lot of energy from the plant to do that. And then it's going to take even more energy for it to produce fruit. So I wouldn't even fertilize before you bring it in, put a little fertilizer on it. But and then in the fall, winter, bringing in into the spring, you need to reacclimate it back into our weather outside. So that's a whole other different ball game. But I would encourage you not to let it flower and fruit.
Ursula, thank you for the call. We need to get Stuart in. So Stuart in Montgomery. Hi, Stuart.
Hi, I have another cover.
Quick, we're running up to the end here, so.
Okay, about a month ago, Peter suggested I go to Northside Grange and get some cover crop seed there, and I did. And now some of it's as tall as maybe 18 inches. Mm-hmm. What do I? It's in my garlic patch, and I'm going to want to replant in October probably. Do I cut it down first, or do I tilt everything under?
Yeah, my guess, he usually had the fall cover. It was a mixed crop. And what you can do now is you can, you know, we call it chop and drop. You can go ahead and just, like, cut it up and let it fall and then turn it into the soil. Let some of those roots come up and be exposed, and then it should die back and then in time for you to plant. You want to do that at least 2 weeks or so before your garlic.
Well, Sarah, Peter, and Melinda, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
No problem.
Adult Education Director at Turner Farm, Melinda O'Brien, Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stolls, and the co-owner of Home Meadow Song Farm and Director of the Community Garden Program at Turner Farm, Peter Huttinger. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. The producer for today's show was Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer was Belinda Kai. Dave Shermer was the technical director. William White composed the Cincinnati Edition theme music. I'm Mark Haney. Thousands of new college students are starting classes this month. It's an exciting time, but many students can feel lost in their new environment. On the next Cincinnati Edition, we'll talk with a professor who's developed a guide to help students navigate the ins and outs of college life. We'll also hear about the Black Family Reunion, which celebrates the strengths and values of the Black family. That's Cincinnati Edition, Thursday afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.